This episode of Warp 5 is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform for creating a blog, website, portfolio, or an online store. To create your own space, visit squarespace.com and save 10% by using offer code TREK8. And also by TrekFan. It's not just a fan club, it's an adventure. You'll explore new places, learn new things, and collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles, complete real-life mission objectives, and win great prizes. Don't miss out. Help move us toward the Star Trek future by visiting TrekFan.org. Plus, if you'd like to support our programming personally, visit Trek.fm/donate to get our new alien badges and art prints featuring original illustration by Tobu Ushi.
Hi, I'm Anthony Montgomery, Ensign Travis Mayweather on Star Trek Enterprise, and you're listening to Trek FM.
How we doing, Trip?
Ready when you are.
Prepare for warp.
Course laid in, sir. Request permission to get underway.
Let's go.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Warp 5, our dedicated Star Trek Enterprise show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as she is every single week, from down in Australia, is Kate Walsh. Kate, I remembered that you've been a little bit under the weather this week, and I have to ask you, you didn't drop by Cold Station 12, did you? Because there's a lot of pathogens floating around that place.
Well, I did pop in the other day, now that you mention it. I honestly thought that it was going to be quite safe, but I happened to walk past this chamber and I thought it smelled a bit funny at the time.
Yeah, well, I understand you thinking it was going to be fine because, you know, Dr. Lucas, he looks so cuddly. He's like everybody's grandpa, and yet you have to feel comfortable around him.
Well, that's right, and, you know, he's the kind of man that you can trust your confidences with as well, so, you know, he really engenders this trust.
He does. So I get it, but best to steer clear of that place. Just don't go around there. That's the best course of action.
Yeah, stick to Cold Station 11.
Nothing ever happens there. It's just calm all the time.
I don't even want to go anywhere near Cold Station 13.
No. It's like why Kirk, they should have docked at Deep Space Station K6, because then, you know, that whole Tribble incident would have never happened.
Oh, well, this is right, isn't it? But then we wouldn't have had a very good episode.
That's true. And then your favorite show, Deep Space Nine, would not have been able to revisit that episode for the 30th anniversary of Star Trek.
That would have been a real shame.
It would have. That's a fantastic episode. Plus, they leave us hanging with great mysteries about the Klingons and their foreheads. And I know we're not going to get into that on Warp 5 today, but at least Worf didn't try to explain it in the way that the extension of the episodes that we're going to talk about tonight did on Enterprise.
And that's an interesting point. I mean, this particular issue in Star Trek is not one that I was particularly looking to have explained. I'm quite comfortable with just accepting it for what it was, you know.
Same here, yeah. It's an interesting debate. I mean, fans love to debate the Klingon forehead issue, and it's a simple case of makeup and budget and, you know, deciding when you go to the big screen that you want to make those aliens look a little more alien. Personally, that's the only explanation that I need. So I liked Worf's explanation of just, it's a long story. And let's leave it
maybe
at that.
Some other time.
But we're not going to talk about Worf on this show, of course, because this is our Enterprise show. But what we are going to talk about tonight is the three-part Soong's Augment arc from the fourth season of Enterprise, which consists of Borderland, Cold Station 12, and the Augments. And also features one of the brilliant guest performances in Star Trek, where Brent Spiner plays an ancestor of Data and Noonien Soong, Dr. Arik Soong.
That's right. Dr. Arik Soong is such an interesting character in this particular three-part series. Brent Spiner, in my mind, does a brilliant job. He's such an interesting actor, and the way that he portrays this character, it just has so much depth from my perspective. So how about you, Chris? How did you take it?
Yeah, Brent Spiner really makes these episodes work for me because I'm kind of mixed overall on the arc. There are parts of it that I love and there are parts of it that I really don't like at all. So it's a mixed bag for me. But Brent Spiner, from start to finish, I think does a brilliant job of playing Arik Soong. And I think that Scott Bakula, of course, has a very strong screen presence. But what impresses me about Brent Spiner in these episodes is that because of his role in the Star Trek universe, and at the point that these episodes are being shot in 2004, we have all lived with Brent Spiner as Data for almost 2 decades, 15 years anyway. And yet, especially in the augments where he has come back to the Enterprise and they're trying to negotiate with the Klingons, and he's on the bridge with Archer. Archer seems like the head figure in those scenes. And Soong really feels like this guy who is the subordinate, who's scared, who's, you know, grasping at straws for his own survival. And I think it's challenging in that situation because Brent Spiner's presence in Star Trek is so strong. It would be easy for him to dominate the rest of the cast just being on screen, but he doesn't. And so I think it's a very impressive job that he did.
And I also think if you contrast that with the first episode in this trilogy, Borderland, and when we first are introduced to the character that Brent Spiner's playing, and to me, he comes across as this madman. He almost reminds me of Hannibal Lecter. And he's got such a strong presence in that cell.
Uh-huh.
And you're thinking, oh God, how's Archer going to handle this guy? And and as you say, to then contrast that with how he comes across at the end and the conflict that he has with the augments in the middle of this arc. It's just so complex. And as I watch it, as you say, I'm of a similar mindset. I have mixed feelings about these episodes. I don't think that they're all of the same quality. There are things that I don't like about them in certain respects. As I watch it, I wonder, you know, how well written is the character of Soong? How much of it is the writing, and how much of it is Brett Spiner? Because to me, his character stands out so much more than the other characters and the other elements of this story.
Well, they added depth to, or at least Brent Spiner added depth to Arik Soong. But I think the writers did too over the course of the story, because we're going to talk about Malik in just a minute. Now, Malik is a character who I really do not like in the story. And the reason I even mention him at this point in the discussion is because you talk about how Soong stands out a lot more than the other characters. And the problem is that the other characters, particularly Malik, are really two-dimensional. They're really cardboard characters, whereas Soong actually does have some depth to him. And, you know, you asked off the air, how do we interpret the actions of Soong? And I think that's really important in this story. And I think that Soong actually legitimately wants to improve mankind through genetic engineering. But things went wrong. He got in trouble. Of course, he did some things that people would view as unethical, which got him in trouble, of course, because he's dealing with genetic engineering. And we know here that by the 22nd century, genetic engineering has been banned on Earth, even in cases where it could be used to cure fatal illnesses, because of what happened in the eugenics wars. And it actually reminds me, you know, as we record this, there's the whole big debate about Syria and the possible use of chemical weapons and such. And the reason it's a big deal is because, you know, we have weapons that have been used in wars in the past year, which caused such devastation that we drew a line and we said, we're never going to allow the use of these things again. And in the Star Trek universe, genetic engineering is that thing because of Khan and the eugenics wars. And so he's doing something that he shouldn't be doing, but yet I think he actually has good intentions. He believes he can improve everyone in this way. And then as he sees things go wrong, he wants to fix those. You know, that's why he's trying to get rid of the violent tendencies later on. So there's some depth to this character is where I'm going with this. And I think that's why the presence is stronger than it is with the other, his children, if you will, here, the Augments.
If I had one concern about the character as it's portrayed, is it would be that it came across to me, and I hope this doesn't sound harsh, that Dr. Sung was unusually naive. You know, we're watching this storyline, we're watching Malik kind of going a bit nuts, a bit power hungry, and, you know, defying him in Cold Station 12, and yet he continues to, I don't even know that he just, you know, believes the best in people. He actually seems excessively naive at times.
Well, I think there are two things going on here. I think that that's certainly true to some extent. And at times, as I've watched these episodes, because I've seen this trilogy here many times, I've had the same feelings. And I've even commented on them before. And as I'm thinking right now, I think there are a couple of things going on here. And I think one of them is the fact that he was gone for a long time. And these kids were roughly, it was about 10 years after he stole them from Cold Station 12 and took them there when he was arrested. And he's been gone for a long time. And he remembers the relationship with them as it was at that point in time. So he comes back and he still feels like he's their father. They're his children. They're going to do whatever he says. That's why he tells Malik, you know, if you defy me again, I'm going to put you down in the, lock you away in the cell or
no
basically.
No dinner for you.
You're not going to see the light of day for a month, because he feels like he still has that control. And what he forgets is that these kids have all grown up at this point.
Mm.
And they're going to defy him.
So perhaps he does still see them as children, not just as his kids, but still as children, and hasn't really adapted to this new mindset.
He does. And it's a natural thing. And that's where I actually think that the writing is okay with me, because, you know, I'm in that situation. I have children. I have a teenage son. And I think as parents, even as your children get older, they're still always your children. But as they get older, they will begin to defy you more and more, which is what we see here, particularly with Malik defying Soong. And Soong is not prepared for that from Malik. And then Malik is an extreme case, because he's basically a psychopath. And he certainly has no respect for what Dr. Soong wants him to do.
So I guess with any other parent, you know, they still may struggle with their children defying them, but they've gone through a process of seeing that emerge and of learning to deal with it over time.
Right. Yeah. And then he's just coming back into it after being gone for a long time. And he has not adjusted to the fact that he cannot dictate everything that these people do anymore, no matter how much they respect him. But I do think you're right that there also is a naivety on his part, and that he probably, I feel like he does want to see the better things in people. He's not the villain of this story by any means. Malik is the villain of the story. And Soong is, in a way, a victim of his own work in the past and his inability to control his work as well.
That is something that I do really enjoy about the episode. As I said, I'm not a major fan of the villain that we end up with.
Yeah.
But when you start watching this trilogy, as I said, to me, you go into it and you see this initial meeting with Archer and Soong, and you know, it's, at least for that first part, I'm quite convinced that it's Soong that is the villain here, and he's actually not, as you say, he's the victim. He's quite a tragic character, and that's an element of the story that I really enjoy watching, you know, his transition there.
Well, the villain that we do end up with, of course, is Malik. So Malik obviously is being presented here as a Khan figure. And I actually always refer to Malik in these stories as a poor man's Khan, because the writing, particularly in The Augments, and I hate to say it because I love Michael Sussman's work, and I love his writing in general, I'm not a big fan of The Augments, the third part of this trilogy. I think that Malik is very poorly written as a character. And I don't feel any sympathy at all for his cause. Like Khan, you can at least see why Khan is upset with Kirk. You can see Khan is not quite the madman that you maybe think he is just on the very surface. He's a bit more of a complex character. Whereas Malik here is just a psychopath. He just basically, I know ultimately the idea is that he wants to start a war between the Klingons and Earth so that the Augments can, you know, kind of come in and take over and come back to power. But really, I think he just wants to kill people. He seems to take great delight in releasing pathogens or just, you know, killing his brother. It's just, he just wants to harm people. And he seems to, like, has to take great delight in it. And that's something where I just didn't feel that way about Khan completely. Mm. And if you read, I know this is what many fans will view as non-canon, but there's a comic series about Khan. It's called Khan Ruling in Hell, and it fills in the gap between Space Seed and The Wrath of Khan. And in that story, you really truly learn why Khan is the way he is when we get to The Wrath of Khan. The character arc is really developed, and there's no character arc development for Malik here. He's just thrown in here as a madman. And so it just doesn't work for me.
Khan has emotional depth to him as a character. Mm-hmm. We don't see that with Malik. And there's even that scene where Song talks about, as you've mentioned, engineering the aggressive tendencies out of future augments.
Right.
Which implies that the reason that Malik behaves the way he does is purely genetic. And that's a really uninteresting element of the story.
And I don't buy that either, because Persis doesn't act that way,
no.
For example. The other augments don't act that way. It's just Malik.
The others are quite passive and almost, you know, unbelievably so in the way that they just go along with Malik and even the leader before him.
Right. Yeah. So, and I know it's hard to build a lot of character depth in 3 episodes, but you could attempt to do so. And I feel like part of the concept here in terms of the augments. Well, okay, first, to stay on a positive note, what I do like about this is that I like the idea that they're going to fill in part of that augment history, that gap. And they even reference the Botany Bay here, which is kind of cool because they're paralleling Khan and the augments, but these are 2 separate paths. They're 2 separate groups of people. Yeah. You know, they reference the legend of the Botany Bay. And I do like the attempt here to fill this in. And it's kind of cool. I think they would have done better if they had not tried so closely to mimic Khan's behavior in Malik, because that's where you fall into a trap. You know, it's the same trap that Orsi and Lindelof fell into with Into Darkness as well. Of course, in that case, they're actually using the character of Khan. But here, you know, I kind of forgive this story more so because it's in the Prime timeline and it's not actually, you know, trying to recreate that.
Mm.
But it comes off.
We did recreate the hairstyle with Malik a little bit.
Well, they did. They recreate the hairstyle and, of course, at the end of the augments, as he crawls across the bridge and he pulls himself up on the control panel and the flames are going, it's not even an homage. It's actually a recreation of the scene. And I don't like it. I like it when they do homages to past Star Trek. I don't like it when they actually try to recreate moments. And that's what they're
getting
were doing
a little
there.
Bit into darknessy at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. Not quite that bad, but yeah, it's kind of heading that way.
Well, this is something that we discussed a little bit when we spoke with Brandon Braga about the difference in style in that fourth season with Manny Coto versus the way in which Rick and Brandon dealt with their homages to the original series, which was a much more subtle approach. I think that this was anything but subtle. It's not my preferred style, but you know, I know some fans are probably really going to enjoy that.
Well, there's no doubt that this is a good trilogy, and this is a strong moment for Enterprise. I don't think it's as strong as the Vulcan arc that we get, you know, with Kirshara and that arc in the Forge and Awakening, but it's still a strong arc, and it has a lot of great stuff in it. I love the Orions being in Borderland. It's quite nice. And there are some subtle nods to past Star Trek in here as well. The fact that they're going to the Briar Patch, you know, that's Insurrection. That's where the Baku live in Insurrection. And that's nice. There are a lot of little nice touches in here. So don't get me wrong.
And there's nothing better than that moment when the slave trader holds to pull up.
I know, and she's like a little doll. She's shaking.
She's completely limp.
Well, I like Jolene Blaylock's head nod too. She's just shaking like she's a toy.
Chris, I have to say, one of the things I'm actually quite disappointed that you haven't mentioned so far, which is one of my personal favourite elements of these episodes, and that is the unusually tattered and revealing costumes being worn by the augments, which I can only assume are that manner because they've just been too busy fighting for survival and trying to take over the world to worry about obtaining new clothes for themselves.
I guess so, yeah. Of course, it did give them that Wrath of Khan feel, though.
But in all honesty, I think it's one of those elements that I've spoken with a few people about that it perhaps felt a little contrived, but the thing I like about it, and it's consistent with other elements of Enterprise, is that it's a little bit of that sexiness that Enterprise tries to bring into Star Trek. You know, gaping holes in just the right places and so forth. And that's not something that we see in the other Star Treks quite as much.
No, I was expecting Persis to beam over to the Enterprise and change into some Starfleet blue undies.
Well, I thought that she might have gone through the transporter and, you know, the effect of the technology just kind of completely shredding and decomposing her uniform on energizing, and really disappointed that didn't happen.
I think that would have been cut from the episode if that had happened.
It seriously looked like it was going to fall apart at any moment.
Yeah. You know, speaking of things that would be cut from the episode, one thing I found interesting here in reading up on kind of the background of these stories, and maybe our UK listeners can back this up, is the fact that Channel 4 in the UK, when they aired these episodes the first time, that they expunged the violence out of these episodes, that a lot of stuff was cut. The Dr. Lucas's torture scene was cut out of the episode. And wow. And that I can kind of understand. I mean, it was kind of gruesome for Star Trek. Although it was not gruesome for American television in the mid-2000s. So I think it was pretty normal for TV at that time, but for Star Trek, surprisingly graphic. But more so than that, in the augments, the fight scene between Malik and Persis was cut out of the episode. And so Persis just kind of disappears from the story with no explanation.
I wonder what the fans made of that.
Well, I'm sure initially they must have been very confused until they, you know, found out that this had been cut out of the episode. And, yeah, you know, you remember 2004 was, well, I don't know exactly what year this aired in the UK, but 2004, every detail of every single thing was not quite yet flying around the internet in the way that it is now. So it may not have been an instant, hey, they cut a bunch of stuff out of the episode, you know, eureka moment.
I can't imagine them not having seen that scene on Cold Station 12. To me, that's a defining moment of the whole arc.
It is.
To me, it makes that episode. It's that's absolutely one of my favorite scenes.
Well, it's the point at which, you know, Malik has lost it. It's the point at which Soong shows his weakness to Malik as well when he releases the pathogens too late, but he releases them anyway. And that's important because that's how Malik really knows moving into the final part of the story that he can stand up to his father and overthrow him because he has shown that sign of weakness. So yeah, it's a very important scene. And yeah, to cut that out, I don't know. I don't like it when they cut stuff out of TV shows or movies in general.
And it's so interesting that it's Soong's humanity that is seen as his weakness. I find that just such an interesting concept when we think about, you know, the character arc with Data and him striving to be human. And then we've got Soong who is really showing his compassion and, you know, and as you say, all of this was about, from his perspective, trying to improve humanity and thinking he was doing the right thing. And he really, as much as he wanted access to that code, he was not prepared to do absolutely anything for it. He wasn't prepared to kill another human being.
Right.
So it's such an interesting element when you look at, you know, Star Trek as a whole.
Yeah, it definitely is. I like the fact that he is an ancestor of Data and an ancestor of Noonien and Soong. It almost sounds like a gimmick, and casting Brent Spiner could have easily turned out to be a gimmick. And when I found out he was going to be in the episodes, I was actually kind of worried that it was going to come off that way. But it is a case where I think they really hit a home run in this, that it doesn't feel like a gimmick at all. It really feels, he feels like a different character. You know, you don't feel like, oh, there's Brent Spiner, there's Data playing it. No, he really comes off as a unique individual.
And quite different to Noonien Soong as well.
Right, yeah.
I mean, so it's very okay, cool. I've got a question for you, Chris. You know, one of the theories out there in relation to the family tree of the Soongs and eventually Data is that Arik Soong actually cloned himself because, you know, going back to prison, how was he going to procreate to develop his ancestral line? And, of course, with his ancestors looking so similar to himself. What do you think about that theory?
Are you saying that maybe he and Jango Fett are the same person? No, I think it's an interesting theory. I hadn't really thought about that. I had kind of always just thought about the idea that, you know, he eventually gets released from prison. Archer tells him that, you know, all your research is being stored in a secure location and such. But that's an interesting theory. And I mean, he is a geneticist. So there's no reason to think that that wouldn't be a possibility. So I don't know. It's one of those things that we'll never really know, I guess, unless it gets filled in novels, which I'm not aware of it having been explained in novels, although it's possible. But yeah, good theory. Makes sense to me.
Yeah, well, it goes along the lines of him having smuggled out his DNA along with elements of his research so that can be continued on in the family line. And of course, the idea as well that, you know, that with genetic engineering, the mental faculties are completely mimicked as well. But that's the general theory.
Yeah, I like it. I hadn't thought about that, but works for me. Maybe that'll become part of my personal canon. We'll find out. I'll have to think about it a little bit.
The canon of priests.
I have a lot of unique things in my personal canon. For example, how did Kira and Dukat steal Breen uniforms and still not see the Breen? Because no one's ever seen a Breen. My personal canon is the Breen were in the shower. They left their uniforms. They left their refrigeration suits outside while they bathed. Kira and Dukat stole them. That's how I explain it. That's what I mean by my personal canon.
I can buy that.
Well, we were just talking about what happened on Cold Station 12 with him, and it is the big ethical dilemma, right? And we really see the contrast here where we see Dr. Soong, who is, you know, trying to push Dr. Lucas into revealing the code. But as you said, he's not quite ready to cross that line. Mm. And he tries to justify it. You know, he says, this is on your hands, not mine. He's trying to justify it to himself, but in the end, he really can't. And then you've got Malik, who's like, Father, you know, we can put him in that chamber over there, and we can release diseases, and then we can take the diseases and bomb planets with it. And it's just such a contrast there going on ethically.
There's also that interesting, you know, father-son tension, which we start to see at this point, where you can imagine Soong must be thinking, what have I done to raise a son like this? This is not how I raised you. And imagine that's something a lot of parents would think, you know, particularly with rebellious children, you know, raised you to have certain values, and where did it all go wrong? And obviously he left the children to go to jail at 10 years of age, but Malik was just so different to the other children. And I also think, though, in this scene, Dr. Lucas is just brilliant. The way that he interacts with Dr. Soong, it's just so intense. And I love that moment where Soong says to him, how can you do this? And he responds, how can you do this? Mm-hmm. And it's just butting heads, and it's that final moment where Soong has to decide, you know, how far am I prepared to take this? And you mentioned he wasn't quite ready yet to do that. I don't think he ever would have been. I think that was the foundation of the character, that ultimately he did value human life.
Right, yeah, that's what I meant by that. So, yeah, he's not going to do that. I mean, he wants to better humanity. You know, Malik asks him at one point, is the life of one human worth all of us? And I don't know. I mean, I think to Soong that it kind of is. I mean, he wants to better humanity. He doesn't he doesn't want to just randomly kill people, even if it does.
Because, you know, otherwise, where does it stop?
Right. Yeah. And that's what we see with Khan too. You know, he just kind of, he gets out of control. Like when he goes to Regula and he starts killing everyone, he loses it. But Malik doesn't lose it. Malik's already lost it at some point long before this story begins. So, yeah. And speaking of Malik, tell me what you think about the ending. I already mentioned, you know, the bird of prey going down in flames and all that. But what I especially did not like in the ending is the bird of prey explodes. You see the Enterprise leaving the system like the episode's over. And then there's that little stinger where Malik somehow shows up on the Enterprise. What was that?
I think I would have much preferred it if it just ended with them all gone and done for, and then we're just left with Soong's remorse.
I think everyone would have been happier if it had ended. I really don't know what that scene is.
And it's very much like, once we've discussed a little bit, Into Darkness, and, you know, one of those big action movie scenes where you think it's all over, and then all of a sudden it all comes back again and gets thrown right back into that last 15 minutes of action to finish up on.
The only thing that I can think of to justify why they put that in there is so that Soong and Malik can have a final father-son confrontation, so that Soong can realize what he created, and that he's going to die at the hands of his creation. And of course, luckily, Archer saves him because he, you know, soon gets up and he's got that big gash across the forehead, and Malik is going to choke him. And he would have if Archer hadn't literally shot a hole through the middle of him. But that's the only thing I can think of as to why it's there in terms of writing a story, and you want to make this one final point, but it just feels so contrived. It feels so out of place that it just shouldn't be there.
I also think a part of the reason why it doesn't work for me is because I feel that point should have been well made already.
Right, yeah.
And I think ending it on, you know, that sacrifice would have had a much greater emotional impact if they just all died and that was the end of it.
Right, yeah, I think so too. So that gets me every time I see it. Because sometimes I forget it's there almost. I'm like, I watch through and then I see the Enterprise go and I think, okay, we're done. Oh no, there's Malik again.
Okay. He's back.
So
yeah, whatever. I think the only other thing that ending does do for me is it almost brings me full circle. You know, we start off with this hostility with Archer and Sung, and in the end, Archer saves Sung, and so that has a little.
That's
bit
a good
of
point.
Interest yeah. to me.
That's a good point too. So I think we see two reasons why that's there. In terms of what Sussman wanted to say to conclude this whole story, it's just the way it's handled. It just feels like, I don't know if it's like an epilogue. It's like a coda. It's not even a good coda. It's just like, oh, I forgot I wanted to make this point. Can you splice this onto the end of the episode, please? It's how it feels. So it's just kind of weird that it's there. One more topic to talk about before we wrap up here, just the idea of genetic engineering in general, because that is the crux of the episode. And of course, the whole thing surrounding the eugenics wars and augments and Khan and Soong and Malik. And it's a theme that runs through Star Trek. Of course, we get into it in Deep Space Nine as well, because we have Dr. Bashir, who is genetically engineered. And of course, Dr. Bashir is a case of genetic engineering where somehow it worked and things turned out okay. And, you know, following up Deep Space Nine, they did the 8th season of Deep Space Nine in the novels, and the third book, technically, because there were two books that started out the relaunch. The third book is called Abyss. And in the story, Section 31 is trying to get an augment agent, basically. And there's this scientist who's very much, he's a sympathizer of Colonel Green and Khan. And the book starts out with a quote that is attributed to Starfleet Rear Admiral Bennett. And the quote is, "For every Julian Bashir that can be created, there's a Khan Singh waiting in the wings." And I thought that quote in that book really sums up the whole genetic engineering debate in Star Trek in the first place. That even though in some cases it could improve mankind the way Eric Soong wants to do here, the potential for it to really go wrong is so great that it's something that humans and the Federation have chosen to steer clear of.
It's an interesting point, but it's I'm not sure that it's a concept I'm overly comfortable with in the way that it's presented, this particularly for a sci-fi show. I have read the book Jurassic Park, and it explores the nature of science and
the more so than the film version, right?
Yeah, very much so. But it really looks at the potential for science to get out of control, that science is about just discovering just because we can, that's how it's presented. You know, and it raises these questions of you know, where could that take us, and almost a doomsday approach with it. And I was reminded of that watching these episodes. And there's an element of truth in that And this debate has come up recently in terms of stem cell research as well, which is quite a controversial topic.
Right.
We do get the other side of it in these episodes where we hear about Archer's father and the mm-hmm. illness that he suffered and how he would have benefited from genetic research. And I just, as I said, it does sit a little bit uneasily with me that the message seems to be that there is more bad than good that comes from this.
Right. Yeah, but I think I'm on the same side of the fence with you, actually, because I think that, I don't know, it's really difficult. It's any technology has the potential to lead to very negative consequences. And if you think about it, genetic engineering is a reality of our future. It's going to happen. It's already happening, and it's going to happen. Now, whether it happens in the way that it does in the Star Trek universe, where we create Superman who, you know, take over the Earth, I don't know. But in terms of, is it going to be a thing? It is. And we're going to have to figure out how to deal with it. And in that sense, you know, maybe the fact that Star Trek portrays it in such a negative light may be beneficial to us, because it is a warning. And that's what science fiction should be doing too, is providing warnings. I mean, you see so much dystopian science fiction, and none of us want to live in a dystopian world, yet we do enjoy dystopian stories, but they are warnings to us of things that we need to be aware of as our society and our technology progresses. So there is that. You know, another really good story related to that is Gattaca.
I have seen that, yes.
That's another story, and I think a very real story of where we're headed. And of course, you know, robots, androids, these are things that are going to be in our future. And, you know, Battlestar Galactica is a case. We're going to build life forms like that. So how do we deal with them?
I guess I would like to have seen a little more reflection on the tension in that debate, in the story. It also has the potential to mirror everyday life anyway, where you tend to have those that have advantages and those that are disadvantaged in life, you know, and the different opportunities and that are afforded different social groups. And so, you know, that's the kind of story that Star Trek has the potential to tell really well. And as we've said, I think I actually, you know, at the end of the day, I really do enjoy these episodes. I find them quite entertaining. And we haven't spoken a lot about the first installment, but I love the whole Orion slave market.
Yeah, that's
part of really that story.
Fun,
that's a lot of fun. Yeah. It's not directly relevant to the Augment storyline, but it's great to watch. But I do think that, you know, overall it is a very action-y trilogy, and I think that, you know, there's some really big issues there, and across three episodes I think there was potential for more to be explored. Going back to an episode like Dear Doctor, you know, it really does get into those ethical debates much more so.
I feel like that's a great point. I feel like this is a case where Enterprise was a victim of the studios meddling with the show and chasing ratings and such, because if this story were done certainly on Deep Space Nine, but even if the story were done on The Next Generation, they would have delved more deeply into those issues that you wanted to hear about. And in season one or two of Enterprise, I think they would have delved more deeply into them as well. At this point, they're really trying to get more of the action into the show, I believe. And it's exactly the problem. So we went to see Star Trek Into Darkness. It finally opened here in Japan. And of course, I saw it back in June at Paramount. But we went, and my wife went with me. And she's not really a Trekkie, but she watched the movie. And afterward, I asked her, what did you think about it? And she said, well, it's a really fun action movie, but it lacks depth. And her point was that although they do introduce some interesting issues about relationships, and they do get into it to a certain point, they then stop. They don't go as far into it as they really should for the story. to connect with the kind of the story she wants to see. And I think that's what we get in this episode here as well, that we get a little bit too much of the action stuff towards the end, whereas what would really make this really great Star Trek, what would make this a 10-star episode for me, would be if they went deeper into that debate.
We hear a little bit as well from Phlox about how his people have managed to deal with genetic engineering through, you know, in terms of just purely medical issues.
Yeah.
And as I said, we get a little bit of Archer. So it's like they were trying to go there. And I just think, particularly after that scene in Cold Station 12 and the depth that we're getting to in the story at that point, it just, to me, it let itself down a little at the end.
Yeah.
You could see they were trying to go there, just not quite far enough.
They didn't quite get there. Yeah.
It is interesting what you've said about, you know, the similarities with Into Darkness. It has a very similar feel to me. We've got those Khan elements coming in, and as you said, the scenery is coming out of the rubble, and it's, you know, quite obviously just you know, really copying that original scene. And to me, I love season four and I love the arcs that we see, but it really, a lot of it seems to be about much more obviously paying homage to the original series than what we see in earlier Enterprise. And to me, this trilogy typifies that.
Definitely. Yeah, I agree. So in closing, though, after saying all of this, and I know we've kind of beaten up on these episodes a little bit, but we've also praised them as well. Still overall, as a three-part story, I still am quite fond of these, and I think it's really good Enterprise, and it's good Star Trek, and there are things that they could have done that would have pushed it over the edge to make it brilliant. But Brent Spiner is absolutely brilliant in these episodes. There's no doubt about that. And they raise a lot of interesting issues. So, you know, for me, this is still probably like 8 vials of pathogen out of 10. So it's still, you know, quite high up on my list.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I do really enjoy watching it on the whole. And I think for me, when I reflect back on these 3 episodes, you know, this is all about Sung for me.
Mm-hmm.
And Brent Spiner absolutely makes this trilogy. And so rather than focusing on the augment stuff and what that, how, you know, the gaps that that fills in for the series, I prefer to look at this as adding some depth to the journey that we see Data go on and what we hear of Noonien and Sung and coming to understand, you know, the perspective of this man. It would be very easy to look at him as a villain and a bad guy, but there's great depth to his journey. So, yeah, I think for me, I'd probably go with 8 Orion Slave Girls on this one too.
Wow. That's actually a very powerful rating right there.
It is, you know, dangerous.
8 Orion Slave Girls. You get all those pheromones in the same room with you. That's it's quite a rating.
Look out.
All right. Well, it's been really interesting. I really enjoyed our discussion today of the Augment arc. But, you know, this isn't the only thing we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. So here are some other things that you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, the Orb.
The Mirror Universe.
I think that Sisko got, I mean, he went to that universe. He was like, it's been a while. I've always wanted to sleep with Dax. Here we go.
The Ready Room.
Kirshara.
We never got to see what it looked like from McCoy's point of view, to have Spock's Katra within it rattling around in his brain. And I think it was at least cool to see from Archer's point of view, having a Vulcan philosopher, you know, sharing brain space with him and kind of interrupting his day with inspirational screensavers.
Deck 8.
Battleship Royal Rumble.
As at any contest, it gets harder as it goes on. And so it was reasonably easy to start with, but I don't think, you know, the ship Tom decided to come in was very good.
To the journey!
Star Trek Las Vegas recap.
And that might have been when he bought his costume, because he came up later for another panel with William Shatner and Kate Mulgrew in a captain's uniform TOS style. I'm not saying it happened, I'm just thinking.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Bid time return.
I'm going to hypnotize myself. This seems like a reasonable method. I mean, that to me is almost like someone saying, like watching Back to the Future and saying, like, yeah, I'm going to build a time machine out of a DeLorean.
Warp 5.
Directing Enterprise with Robert Duncan McNeil.
They slipped and started sliding down like a slide. And it was very hard for us to figure out how to film that. And ultimately, we ended up putting a bunch of dirt on the floor and turning the camera sideways and dragging them across the floor. So all those real tight shots of them sliding down is really just them lying on the stage floor and being dragged 50 feet.
Trek News and Views.
Someone to watch over me.
The worst thing about the 7 of 9 Chakotay romance is Jerry Ryan and Robert Beltram actually asked them, do you want us to do this in a romantic way as it's leading somewhere? And they said to him, no, there's no way you two would ever work as a couple.
Literary Treks.
From History's Shadow.
Well, like particularly for the UFO lore, for lack of a better term, I really wanted it to be as close as I could get to being right on. But, you know, obviously I had to make some concessions for the Star Trek take on certain events.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all those shows and get your Trek Talk fix. We have new Star Trek Talk for you every day of the week, and some days we even have two shows for you. And you'll find them everywhere you get your podcasts, on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune. You can download files from the website. You can stream from the website. We have many places for you to get our shows, so go check them out. And you can go to trek.fm/pd for podcast directory to get all the links. Now, Kate, each week so far, I think every week almost, we've been able to read some reviews from iTunes. And we have several more this week, and I thought that I would read the first one because someone in the iTunes store, someone named 13 of 37, who apparently is from a really large gang of Borg, at least that's how I took it, thinks that you have a really cute Australian accent.
Oh my, that's very interesting. I certainly appreciate the feedback, although I think in Australia my accent might just be a pretty standard one, but yeah, thank you for that.
Yes.
That's very nice to know.
But yeah, 13 of 37 left us a great 5-star review. He said, fantastic podcast. And said that we both seem to prepare well for each show and we hold interesting discussions about Enterprise. And that they are learning a lot of cool facts and details about the show, which they hadn't caught yet. And so that's great. And I'm glad that we're able to bring some of that stuff forward to everyone. And of course, we have to thank Brian Braga and Dave Rossi and Robert Duncan McNeil and Doug Drexler for bringing that information to you, because those are the guys that have all that cool inside information. But we're glad that Warp 5 can be a vehicle for them to share that stuff with everyone out there in the audience. So thank you, 13 of 37, very much for that review. And Kate, we have another one here from Liquid Cross. Now, Liquid Cross has been leaving us reviews for quite a few of our shows recently, and we're becoming quite fond of Liquid Cross. And what did they have to say about Warp 5?
Well, Liquid Cross has also given us a 5-star review. And in particular, they've commented on, the fact that we have brought quite a few interviews already on Warp 5, the ones that you've mentioned in particular. And they've kind of made the comment that, you know, as we've said, so much is available on the internet nowadays, you know, that the moment a bit of information becomes available, it's available to everyone. And I guess it's very easy to assume that everything you're ever going to know about Trek is already out there. So Liquid Cross has commented quite graciously that they've enjoyed hearing the stories that we've brought to the Trek community through these guests, things that perhaps people hadn't heard before. And I really appreciate that feedback, because that's certainly something that I pride myself on, that I aim to do with this podcast, is to bring new and meaningful material to the Trek community, whether that's through us just talking together, Chris, or through the guests that we have had on the show.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I've learned a lot of new stuff through this show as well, you know, just talking to Brandon and Dave and Doug and Robbie and everyone. So it's been great in the same way for me too. So I'm glad that we're able to do that. So thanks so much, Liquid Cross, for yet another review of a Trekka film show. We really appreciate your support there. And then we have one more. And Kate, this is our very first review from Australia for Warp 5. This is in the Australian iTunes store. And this is someone named Gary Delum. I'm just going to read it out. It's Gary D-L-U-M. So I'm assuming it's Delum.
Yes. I'm sure he has a very cute Australian accent as well.
He probably does, yeah. Hear that, Gary? You have a cute Australian accent. Kate said it right here on the show. So Gary said that you actually directed him to Warp 5 Gate, and he really enjoyed listening to the interview with Brannon and is looking forward to the rest of the shows. So we're looking forward to bringing you more shows ourselves. So thanks, everyone, for all those reviews. And to everyone else, if you enjoy the show, please drop by iTunes. It only takes about 30 seconds to leave us a star rating and a written review. We love to hear from you, and it also really does help people who are searching for Star Trek Enterprise podcasts in iTunes, which are difficult to find, locate the show in the iTunes store so that they can also enjoy Warp 5. So we would really appreciate you dropping by and leaving us a rating there. And Kate, let's tell people how to contact us in other ways. If you'd like to send us a message, you can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose Warp 5, and that will come to both of us by email. You can also leave us a voicemail by clicking on the tab that you'll find on the right-hand side of any page on the website. When you click that, a box will appear. You can use your webcam's microphone to record a voicemail and then upload it to us as an MP3 file. If you'd like to talk to other listeners, we have forums where you can do that. Go to trek.fm/forums. There's a section there for Enterprise and one for Warp 5. And in social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username trekfm. Now, Kate, when you're not over at Cold Station 12, you know, trying to help clean up that whole mess that Malik made, where can people find you?
Well, probably the first stop is the Orion Slave Market, but if you can't find
Oh, you like to hang out there, do you?
I do, yeah. In my spare time anyway. But when I'm not there, the other place you're going to find me is on Twitter, at Katie's Great Okay. If you'd like to have a chat with me like Gary did, either about the podcast, the discussions that Chris and I have, the interviews, anything you're interested in, you may want to know if we've already covered it, just contact me on Twitter. I'm happy to talk. I'll follow you back, whether that's about Star Trek or anything else in particular. I'm also a crochet enthusiast, Chris, and I'm making a crochet Captain Archer at the moment. So I'm more than happy to share pictures of those accomplishments with people too.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to your crochet Malik, though.
Oh, that may have to be the next project, complete with ripped uniforms.
Yes. And your crochet purses with the uniform just about to unravel and fall off of it.
That's right.
That's real talent in crocheting right there. All right. Well, if you'd like to find me, you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere on social media under that same username. And you can find me at my personal website at cbrianjones.com, where I do talk about things other than Star Trek. If you happen to be a college football fan, drop by. I'll be talking about that over there now that the season is kicking off as well. And you'll also find me elsewhere on the network with Matthew Rushing. Twice a week on Sundays, we do Literary Treks, where we talk Star Trek books and comics and interview authors. And on Mondays, we do The Orb, where we talk about Deep Space Nine, very much in the way that we talk about Enterprise here on Warp 5. And on Tuesdays, you'll find me on The Ready Room, where I'm joined by other hosts from all across Trek FM, as well as other special guests, and we discuss Star Trek news and all 5 live-action Star Trek series. So check that out as well. Also, before we go, we'd like to ask you to support our sponsors for this week's show. Your support of our sponsors is very important to making it possible for us to bring Warp 5 to you every week. First, there's Squarespace, the web's best hosting and CMS that makes it simple for you to create a beautiful blog, website, portfolio, and online store. Really anything you can imagine. I've been using Squarespace for 6 years. I absolutely love it. So go try it out for yourself. You can get a free 14-day trial, no credit card required. And then when you sign up, you can use offer code TREK8 to save 10% off your lifetime purchase on new accounts. And if you choose the annual plan, you can get a free custom domain registration as well. And all that helps us bring Warp 5 to you every week. So we really thank Squarespace for their support of Trek FM. Also, please visit trekfan.org. This is a great chance for you to come together with other fans to solve puzzles and collaborate on real-life mission objectives. And along the way, you can win great prizes. So turn your love for Star Trek into something that can help us move toward that Star Trek future that we all love. Visit trekfan.org, support them, support Warp 5, and we really thank them for their support of Trek FM. And also, Kate, you know I love jazz, right? You love jazz too?
I love jazz.
Everybody loves jazz. Well, not everybody loves jazz. I don't know if Spock loves jazz, but T'Pol does, and she's Vulcan. And if you also love jazz and the smooth version of Where My Heart Will Take Me that we use here on Warp 5 as our theme, go and get a copy of Andrew Allen's album, Smooth Federation, because Andrew has that plus 9 other jazz renditions of music from across Star Trek. It's really a fantastic album. I listen to it all the time, and I know you're going to enjoy it too. You'll find it in iTunes or on Amazon. So go pick it up and support what Andrew is doing over there. And lastly, if you'd like to personally support what we're doing here at Trek FM, there's a way for you to do that as well. And we have some cool aliens for you in exchange. If you go over to trek.fm/donate, you'll find 8 alien-themed badges and art prints. These are custom illustrations done by Topa Ushi, who does most of the artwork that you see on our website. You can mix and match badges and art prints, choose what you like. We have different contribution levels that you can make, and your donations help us cover the costs of production, storage, and bandwidth that's needed to bring Warp 5 to you every week. So please go over to trek.fm/donate, help us out, help us keep this programming coming to you, and we really appreciate your support of the network.
So thanks everyone again for listening. Join us again next week here on the Decon Chamber for another episode of Warp 5.